today on Vox Talks Economics, has AI eaten the economics major? Welcome to another of our special episodes recorded at the CEPR Annual Symposium in Paris. My name is Tim Phillips. When Gen AI can do an undergraduate's problem set in seconds, how should teaching and the economic syllabus respond? Well, who better to answer this than Wendy Carlin of UCL and CEPR, who, since we recorded this, has become Dame Wendy Carlin for her services to economics. Wendy was at the symposium to talk about how she is changing economics teaching through the CORE project, about which you'll hear much more in a moment, and about how the skills we teach students in the era of Gen AI may have to change. At the symposium, CEPR was also giving Wendy an award, one for her lifetime service to the economics profession. She's going to need a bigger mantelpiece. Hello, Wendy. Welcome.
Very nice to talk with you, Tim.
At this point, before we get going, Wendy, I have to declare an interest on this, don't I? Because we're going to be talking about CORE, and I had some small connection with CORE in the early days.
That's right. Not to mention inventing the logo.
Yeah. Can we tell people that? Early on, I worked editing the copy and helping to put the thing together. And so it's great to see it so successful. But I suppose we better tell people, what is CORE?
So I think the best way to describe it is that it's a global collaboration of researchers who are getting together to transform the way economics is taught in the undergraduate years.
So who was responsible for creating it and who's using it now?
We can go back to a very initial meeting that I organized at NBER with about a dozen people. And this was in the beginning of 2013. A number of people felt that in the wake of the financial crisis, the Great Recession, there were some kind of gaps between what we were teaching our students and what we were learning in research, what students were asking for, what they were getting, and so on. So the idea was to just get a dozen people and ask the question, do we need to do anything about the way we teach economics? And about half the people there thought, no, it's fine. We just need to update the empirical work. And that was people like Daron Acemoglu, for example, but no major radical change. And then the other half thought that a bigger change was needed. And one of the movers and shakers was Sam Bowles, but there were other people in the room, Rajiv Sethi, for example, Juan Camilo Cardenas from Los Andes, Arjun Jayadev from Azim Premji. So there's quite a wide geographic spread. And also some people from outside economics. So I think Katerina Pistor was there as well from Columbia Law.
So you created this, as you say, from the beginning, it had that wide geographical spread. And has that been replicated in the people that now use this?
That's right. We have a big global imprint. So we have probably 80 countries using it all around the world. There are some gaps. So we always have to have the next horizon in mind. So, for example, there's quite a weakness in Africa and in MENA, Middle East and North Africa. I would say they're currently the big gaps that we need to move on to. And part of the spread of CORE has been through translations. And we've been very successful in mobilizing ground up efforts on the translation front. And at the moment, we've got translations of the latest flagship, The Economy 2.0, the micro and macro volumes. And those translations are happening into Chinese, Korean, and the Spanish ones completed.
Because also your method of working, I remember this very well, was always extremely unconventional. It was to find people who were willing to take part in this and commit their time to it. And large numbers of the people that have done the work on this have done it unpaid voluntarily.
Absolutely. That's the sense in which it was a mobilization of the willing. So people with lots of different kinds of expertise in different fields within economics, getting them together in a way that they often had never experienced. Economic historians, experts in the economics of innovation, theorists, macro people, all kinds of applied people who are kind of working in their research furrow, but we could easily convince them that they had something to contribute to this broader project.
When I was studying, econ textbooks were pretty much interchangeable. It didn't really matter. The diagrams were the same. The chapters were the same. How would my experience be different if I was taking an economics class today and they were using The Economy 2.0, your book?
So the standard approach is to center the content for a first course essentially on Marshall plus Keynes, and to use a particular method of teaching, which begins with a model. So the instructor selects the model, teaches the model with all the standard diagrams that you were referring to, and then they cherry pick an example that illustrates the model, and the students learn that. They do some exercises, and then if the example doesn't quite fit, the instructor comes up with some frictions, but that comes out of the instructor's back pocket, as it were, and then they move on to the next model. So that's the standard way. The core way is completely different. In the core classroom, for one thing, students are strongly incentivized to read independently ahead of the class. They come into the classroom, they're often given a quiz, something actually active to do to get them engaged. The starting point is always something in the world, historically, something contemporary, some striking example like exploding tires or the constitution of a pirate ship, or the transformation of the skyline in Shanghai. And then the next step is to say, how can we use economic models to shed light on that problem or those facts that have intrigued you to begin with? So we then teach a model, and that's, after all, economics's superpower. And we want to convince students that models can shed insight. And then we go back to the real world example and say, how did the model do? How successful was it? What's missing? What's wrong with it? And we engage the students critically in their understanding of the relationship between the model and the world.
Now, it's been going for a little while now, so we have a lot of students who will have used Core to learn economics. Can you claim that Core is better than a traditional textbook approach?
It's very difficult to test this. We've got some results in a narrow band width, which is a quite a well-designed study in La Trobe Business School in Melbourne. And they did a proper diff-in-diff study.
Wow.
Comparing students who were taught with Core with students who were taught with Mankiw. And you can find the study. It was published in the Southern Economic Journal. It's about as good a design as you can get. And there's another big study from Uruguay coming in as well. But the one at La Trobe was interesting because what they were asking, it was narrow, but they were asking about, was there any effect of students studying Core in year one on their grades in all the other courses they did subsequent to that course in their degree program?
Right.
So that's courses in accounting as well as economics, in social sciences, across the whole range. And what they found is that students who had taken the Core course did better by about 0.26 of a standard deviation. So quite marked impact. And, you know, more interesting is to wonder why. They can only speculate on that, but consistent with the very different method of teaching and the different content is things like, well, it may have made students better learners. It may have made them more curious, that they would ask more questions in their otherwise unchanged later courses. So they're the kind of ideas that have come out of that study.
AI has already had a profound impact on the way researchers work and the tools they use to do that work. We were there at the start, or more precisely, Anton Koronek was. We spoke to him in March 2023 in the episode AI is Reshaping Economic Research. Listen to this archive episode by following Vox Talks Economics wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Wendy, you're here to talk about the threat from Gen AI, which, of course, we're all talking about at the moment, to the economics major. Of course, all students are very familiar with what Gen AI can do for them. If I had a traditional economics problem set, the sorts of things that we've all done very many of in our academic careers. What elements of that can Gen AI help with or do for me today?
Gen AI is particularly good at structured learning tasks.
Uh-huh.
And that's more or less the definition of a problem set.
It is.
So a very well-defined problem with uh-huh. very clear parameters and an answer. There's a great deal of standard problem sets that Gen AI can complete. And that's a good thing in a way, because we can deploy the strengths of Gen AI as a tutor to help students through some of those standard problems, which we would want all economics graduates to be able to solve. So that's a way of harnessing the use of Gen AI in that standard setting.
I remember some of the tasks that I had to go through on those were a little bit repetitive and dull, and they took a long time, and you learn in the end. Is it good then if Gen AI sort of hurries you through it and takes away the drudge work?
I think a better way to think of it perhaps is that a good Gen AI-based tutor is an adaptive tutor. So if you're learning fast, then you skip through all the steps. If you're finding it really tough, then it can take you back and help you with that kind uh-huh. of repetition and interleaving that we know is a good pedagogy. We can definitely leverage the power of Gen AI in some of the tasks that we want our students to complete.
But you wouldn't really want the students to sort of pretend they'd done it themselves and then just plug it into ChatGPT and get the answer out.
And that really points the finger at the tasks that we're giving students to do. When we think of, as we talked earlier about the difference between the core approach to teaching economics and the standard approach, when we give students tasks that rely on them, for example, becoming independent readers and critical readers and able to handle ambiguity, so situations in which they're required to work with a model, work with some data, but allow for the possibility that there isn't a unique answer. This is where we need to teach students skills that aren't easily replicated by Gen AI.
This gets back to the whole starting point, why you had that conversation at MBER in the first place. Is there also that pull from potential employers? Are they saying we're getting the wrong kind of economics graduates?
I think what's putting a bomb under deans at the moment is the fear that the bottom's going to drop out of the market for yeah. economics graduates. They're like at the cutting edge, unlike us academics. The fear is that the problems that employers identified with economics graduates way back from the Royal Economics Society survey starting in 2012, for example, right through, are the same problems that are now threatening the degree. So let me just summarize what those surveys found. So yeah. they found that our graduates were really good at quantitative tasks. They were really good at the structured learning tasks that we teach them through problem sets, but they were not good at writing. Now we know we can just do a checklist. Gen AI is just as good at the structured learning tasks, the quantitative analysis, the writing code, the doing simulations. Gen AI is just as good at that. Gen AI is much better than most of our graduates at writing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other tasks that employers wanted graduates to be good at were teamwork, were being self-critical. They wanted them to show some cross-cultural sensitivity. They wanted them to be critical engagers in the work tasks. And they wanted them to be able to apply their models to real-world problems. And this was just a tremendous gap.
Yeah.
And the feedback from private employers as well as from the Government Economic Service, the Bank of England, and so on. And this is not just a problem in the UK. It's just that these surveys were done in the UK and replicated actually by work in the US.
So this is not new news, even if the fuss about Gen AI is new. Economics teachers have an incentive to change to match what employers want. They know about the threats to the economics major from technology. Why have they been slow to change?
Because the incentives are not there. Researchers are primarily researchers. That's where they get the buzz. And they typically have very strong promotion incentives, salary incentives, grant-getting incentives, and so on to publish well. That's absolutely crucial to the future of the profession and, by the way, to the quality of the teaching materials that we can produce. So the incentives directly facing teachers are not to worry about the future of the economics major. It's only when they become head of department or dean that they start to worry about this. That's the first reason. Yeah. The second reason is the costs of switching. So if you've got some old PowerPoints or some old slides that you've used 15 times to teach an intro course, you've got all the problem sets worked out. You just roll it out. You might give it a day's thought or a couple of days thought before you start. You really don't have to invest once you've made that initial investment in setting up the course. So there are costs of switching. And the third, and I find the most tantalizing, is that many researchers just don't see the joy that can come from bringing your research and the way you think about research into the classroom. If we think about teaching and teaching material much more the way we think about research, you know, what's the question that's really firing us up? Well, let's think about teaching the same way. Let's fire up the students. What's the question? But what's the data? And what's the model? That's exactly the way we should teach. Make our teaching much more like the way we do our research. And that touches on the content as well. So the way we've modernized the curriculum in core is to take the last 30 or 40 years of new research so that we're moving our undergraduate teaching in principles and the intermediate courses beyond Marshall plus Keynes. We're letting in Nash, Schumpeter, Hayek. We're letting in the information and behavioral revolutions. They're in the classroom. They make the classroom a much more exciting place for the teacher as well.
So if we're going to think about the future economics course, you're through CORE helping to design that future economics course in many universities. What should it be teaching the economics students now, and what can maybe it downgrade because we assume that's going to be done by technology?
On the structure of the pedagogy, if you like, mm-hmm. we should be downgrading the problem set sessions. So we do not need to have 20, 30 students sitting in a room for an hour with a TA going through a problem set, which was always pretty much a waste of time.
I always hated that.
And it's now a complete waste of time. So that that frees up resources, both on the side of the student and on the side of the teacher. But I think the real secret is to bring together the new things we want to teach, the new method, much more in line with the way we think about our research, and the new pedagogy. And something great that we've, again, with a fantastic team that I've had very little to do with in the CORE project, is to build a set of experiments. It's called Experiencing Economics. You can go on the website and find it. It's a lovely blue color. There's a set of experiments. They're growing all the time. They're for every kind of classroom, intro, micro, macro, intermediate, field courses. You'll find one there. There's a set of instructions for you, the instructor, that the students can't see. There's an interface for the student. It's all free. They do it on their phone. And you engage them maybe for 10 minutes, just 10 minutes of your lecture when you know they're awake because they're engaging in this visceral experience of decision-making. And that takes them so much closer to understanding the models that we're bringing to them. They remember how they behaved in the game setting. What we provide for the teacher who's never done this before as a kind of bulletproof instructions, including if everything falls apart, we provide you with some results from another classroom and you can show them to your students. So even if the Wi-Fi completely breaks down, you're not stuck.
Yeah, and a contrast with a lot of the teaching materials that we're used to is that this is bottom up. This has come from people using it in the classroom and sharing it. Do you have a community of teachers now who are experimenting with what we can do, how we can integrate AI as well in the classroom, and that's helping you to create that next generation of materials?
Yes, so this is a bottom-up project. This has been driven by academics around the world contributing their IP and their time for nothing. Everything is free to all the users, and it's growing very rapidly. The moment we have a couple of projects working on AI. So one is to develop an AI tutor And the idea of that is to help students learn to become independent and critical readers.
Uh-huh.
There's really a problem now where students come into the classroom and they find it very difficult to read more than a couple of paragraphs.
Wow.
And if we don't teach them to read, make them find the fun of reading, but also realize it does take effort,
mm-hmm.
they will become dependent on AI summaries
yeah.
and on what we know is AI slop. And I think there's a particular version of AI econ slop, which is based on, you know, the density out there in the yeah. in the training data of the Marshall Keynes paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have all the new stuff that we want to get into the classroom and into our students. And another project is that we're using a whole set of AIs to answer all the questions in the core test bank. And we find very different answers from different AIs.
Interesting.
And then when you push them a bit and ask them to tell you their so-called reasoning or thinking, you can begin to pick out where they've made a mistake. And often relying on a rather simplistic market clearing model, for example, when mm-hmm. the question is more sophisticated. And these provide teaching moments for the instructor. They can show the student, look, if you just rely on an AI, you could get given this. And then even if you try that AI again, you'll get a different answer. How do you discriminate? You've got to have that basis of understanding yourself to be able to select when there's a correct line of reasoning and when it's incorrect, when it's defensible, when it's not. We're trying to develop a sense that AI, and this is among instructors, that AI is not just a problem for cheating, but we want to turn it into a cognitive sparring partner.
Now, you did say earlier that switching costs are very high. If I'm a teacher and I am still doing the Marshall Keynes thing, I know I should be changing and I can see this threat from AI slop on the horizon. Well, it's more than on the horizon now, it's at the gate. Is changing a little bit and adapting in a small way a way to go forward? Or are you saying you really need to completely rethink what you're doing?
Both paths are possible, but it's just way more exciting to be open to a radical change. And just go on the CORE website and have a look. So a great place to start actually is Unit 3 of the Economy 2.0 Micro, because this is the most standard thing we want to teach our students, constrained optimization.
Uh-huh.
And check out how we do it. And you'll see that we begin with data about trends in working hours and GDP per capita over time and across countries. And just reflect for a minute. That's kind of a big question. Interesting question. How can we use that to teach students about feasible sets and indifference curves?
Before everyone goes off to do that, paint a picture for me. What do you think is the best and the worst outcome for the next generation of students now that this challenge exists?
The worst outcome is certainly downgrading of students' ability to think independently and to read independently and to be truly aware of what you get from exerting effort when you're learning. The best is that we create curious learners, and we do that by stimulating them. Students are fascinated by what's going on in the world, and in economics, we have such powerful tools to share with them and help them to address their curiosity, make them even more curious, and make them serious, critical learners. And then they're really fun to engage with.
That is something worth striving for. Good luck with it, Wendy. We hope for many more years of CORE adoption.
And we hope that we'll have many more people joining us and helping us with the crowdsourcing of errors in all the materials that we produce.
I remember doing that. Whether you're a student, a teacher, or just curious, the best way to find out more about CORE is to try it. You can find the texts online at core-econ.org. together with all sorts of teaching materials, online courses, article insights, and even, yes, podcasts.
Mox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next time on Vox Talks Economics, can Europe defend itself?